Stephen Bassett is our guest, and we've been talking about, I guess, your education with the media and how politics really works. It's not pretty, is it?
No, it's not. And I will bet that most of your audience are thinking, well, the reason that he was treated this way by the polls, by the newspapers, by the radio and television locally. Let me, by the way, mention, I had good coverage outside of this area. I had more coverage in Pravda than in all three papers here combined.
That's funny. It would be funny if it weren't, you know, it just, I mean, it's just weird. I guess that's the only way.
Well, let me put it this way. The point I was going to make is that a lot of people would think, okay, this is because of the UFO ET issue that was treated this way.
Not really. Oh, I think it's everything.
Exactly. I think 10% of what I dealt with here was because of the ET issue. 90% is the way all independent and third-party candidates are treated. I've seen it in the others. They got the same business. And it's a national scandal. And I can tell you, folks, after 6 months of getting a real up-close and personal taste of as a non-party person, which I think is important to see it properly, of politics in America right now and the interconnection between the media and politics, for anybody in this country who is really cares about this nation, cares about where it's going, cares about the policies that it makes and the consequences they could have, I have five words for you. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Now, does this have something to do with moving that clock up a little bit?
Well, even though I had a difficult time in this campaign and did not achieve the results we would like to, there have been many other developments, and as a result, just changed the clock, the paradigm clock, and moved it 30 seconds closer to midnight. It's now at 11:58 and 30 seconds. And for those of you that don't know about the Paradigm Clock, it's located at paradigmclock.com, which is the home site for Paradigm Research Group.
Mm-hmm. We have a link to it.
And, yep, we got a link to it. Everybody come to your site, jump over. And it was created back in 1998, and it was intended to be a metaphor to sort of show in a simple way how close we are or far away we are from formal acknowledgement of the extraterrestrial presence by our own government, which will obviously be a significant event. In fact, it'll be the most significant event in history, with the exception perhaps for those of the Christian faith of the birth of Christ, which they could more than appropriately place number one. But it'll be the most important secular event in history. The only thing that'll top it will be contact itself, which I predict it's somewhere around 2010-2012. And so the paradigm clock is set that you can kind of see how it's been changed over the years and so forth, and it's a lot of fun, and I invite you all to drop in, paradigmclock.com. It was just changed based upon a number of developments, and probably the most important centers around the Science Fiction Channel.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this last time you were on. Now, you're putting a lot of stock in this Spielberg thing.
Well, it's more than just that. Essentially, everyone has to keep in mind that people that have a lot of money and a lot of connections have information, and they know what's going on. And so if us little peons have figured out there's extraterrestrials here, you can bet your bottom dollar that some wealthy, powerful people have done the same. And with, I think, disclosure very close, you're going to be seeing corporations, organizations, groups, and powerful individuals positioning themselves. I think that's what's going on here. The Sci-Fi Channel is owned by a multi-billion-dollar multinational company called Vivendi Universal, which also owns Universal Studios, and USA Networks, which is run by Barry Diller. I mean, these are powerful names and people. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Steven Spielberg, of course, is one of the most respected and powerful people in the country. In the world, in my opinion, from political power per se, but power to influence, from worldwide name recognition and reputation for integrity, for quality, and for raising issues. I mean, he's a very powerful man. And He initiated what will soon be starting in December, the largest miniseries in history, which is just happens to be taking up the entire UFO issue. A lot of people think it's just about abduction. It's not. They're going to track the experience of three families over a 50-year period, and so thus using that time frame will then highlight and refer to virtually the entire 50 years of UFO events and evidence. It's a tour de force. Now, it's going to be hyped, and it's going to be an entertainment product, so it's going to exaggerate. We've seen that before. But I think it's also going to reflect the core essence of the research and the work, and to more people in the shorter, and more people around the world than anything has ever done before. And Spielberg's name is behind it. But they went further than that. And, of course, I had actually been talking with Sci-Fi Channel's representative way back in the summer. We spent many hours talking about this whole idea, and I would have loved to have been very much involved as a principal, but I was in a campaign for Congress, and appropriately, I mean, you just can't mix those two. But they went ahead, and they've done a great job. They have basically started an entire separate advocacy project, multifaceted, in conjunction with the launching of this miniseries. And this advocacy project is going to continue on after the miniseries is over. I know that miniseries will probably be shown and reshown for many years. And it's the real deal. It's not a game. It's not a joke. Oh, I said joke. It's not a short-term thing. It's sure. The real deal. And that is they've started rolling that out. And the first press conference was held on October the 22nd. And this is what they've done in a nutshell. They formed a separate advocacy organization called the Coalition for Freedom of Information. That coalition has then hired a law firm in Washington, a K Street law firm.
This is the one with Podesta?
No, that's okay. The PR firm. The okay. Law firm's primary function will be to launch new Freedom of Information Act requests.
No, tell me more about that.
Well, I mean, they're going to pick various targets, and they're going to then use this law firm to file requests to get, quote, new information. But this isn't just some UFO guy out in Montana filing. This is a K Street law firm doing it. So you see the symbolic implications are significant.
Mm-hmm.
But then, to represent their interest about town, which, of course, is de rigueur, they hired a known public relations firm in town to represent the interest of, I think, Sci-Fi as well as, but primarily the Coalition for Freedom of Information. Sci-Fi, Universal, then they have their own lobbyists. But they've hired, which firm did they choose? They chose Podesta Mattoon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is non-trivial because Podesta Mattoon, obviously the principal there is John Podesta, who happened to speak at the initial press conference announcing all this and specifically discussed getting information out of the government, getting documents out of the government, getting the truth out to the people. Now, that is doubly significant, not only because he's a former White House chief of staff and aide to the president throughout the entire Clinton administration, and a known player here, known as a super wonk, in areas of related to this issue, national security, secrecy issues, and so forth, intelligence, but he was present in the White House during most of the time, about two-thirds, the first 2 years, of the large Rockefeller Initiative, which we discussed on this program.
Yes, we did.
Which has never been covered by the news yet. The Washington Post wants to pretend that Lawrence Rockefeller doesn't even exist, and that this initiative never took place. And this, combined with many, many other things, makes me absolutely convinced, though I can't prove it, but I don't care because their actions speak for themselves. The Washington Post is compromised on this issue and is in the pocket of the national security structure on it. It's got a deal with the national security state on this issue that it will not cover it properly.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people talk about the Washington Post being a liberal rag or the New York Times, but I think they're more establishment. In other words, they're in bed with the people who are there in charge now.
Oh, it's very established. Look, it's a good paper. There's a lot of smart, talented people that have papers. Same for the New York Times, same for the Washington Times. They're good papers. I read them all the time. I love these papers. That's not the point. Look, if they weren't talented, smart people, then we could just blame it on incompetence.
Mm-hmm.
But they aren't. They are, and therefore it is incompetence. Therefore, there's only one other explanation. They've cut a deal. Now, what other issues have they cut deals with the national security state on? What other areas are off limits? Well, we don't know, do we? But anybody who understands the way the nation is supposed to work and has read the Constitution, this is not a good thing.
No, it's not.
So, to make a long story short, Lawrence Rockefeller spent 2 years and a lot of money, and a lot of people were involved, to get as much information to the Clinton presidency as possible to convince him, basically, to be the disclosure president. And they did change the classification rules a little bit, and a lot of documents got dumped off, but any focus on the UFO thing disappeared by 96. It simply couldn't happen, and I think the reason for that was clear. The scandals were mounting, the pressure was huge, and Clinton was hated by the military and the intelligence community, so there was no way that that would go anywhere, but Lawrence didn't know that, at least not going in, and so he actually personally briefed Clinton at his ranch, at Rockefeller's ranch, and I my understanding is Hillary Clinton was with him. And other members were given either personal briefings or briefing presentations or materials. All the key advisors, Lindsay, Lake, Gibbons, and of course John Podesta, who was one of the principal advisors in handling the in and out flow of Clinton's communications, knew this was going on, knew that there was something happening there, and probably formed an opinion about whether there's a reality to this. So here suddenly, 8 years later, Podesta turns up on the front line of this issue in Washington, D.C. And now he's he's teaching at George Washington University. He's got a public relation firm that lives or dies on its ability to get clients. So you think if this UFO thing is a bunch of hogwash and there's nothing to it, you think Mr. Podesta is going to park himself out in front of the issue and risk his whole career? I don't think so. And so that is a significant event. But the Sci-Fi Channel has gone further than that. They're setting up a series of symposiums. They held one just last week, in which they brought in Dr. Bernard Haish, Dr. Jacques Vallée, Dr. Michio Kaku, Dr. George Henry, also John Callahan, the FAA witness to the Alaska event, and the head of NARCAP, Ted Lowe, which the NARCAP is the organization with dealing with pilot sightings, of which there are thousands on there, and held a nice presentation at GWU, right, where Podesta, by the way, teaches, and the National Security Archives. The National Security Archives group is located. Their focus is FOIA, though not on UFO documents. And they're holding another symposium on the 19th in New York. For the first time ever, Mack, Hopkins, and Jacobs are going to be in panel and cross discussion on the abduction contactee issue. And they went further. They have either commissioned or are, I guess you could say, commissioned or licensed, and will present in conjunction with the Taken miniseries, which starts on December the 2nd. I believe it's the 2nd. Several documentaries are going to be shown and repeated a dozen times or so, all through that period. So they're doing documentaries on the abduction issue as well as other issues in conjunction with Taken simultaneously. This is significant. They have money. They have an audience. They have a channel. They have a cable channel. And now they are a player in Washington, D.C. So we have that. We also have other developments, not the least of which is the Republicans now control the House and Senate. Now, as I've said in previous discussions, the government will disclose on its terms, and those terms include maximum control of the post-disclosure environment. And maximum control means many things, not the least of which is the party in power will be able to call the shots and will not have to put up with a lot of opposition. And so now we have a situation where we have a popular president, a unified government, a very national security oriented situation. This is all perfect. These conditions may not reassemble again for decades. And so if the Republican administration does not take advantage of these conditions and disclose, they are in for a potentially very rough time. Because the witnesses are going to keep coming forward, and the collapse of the cover-up will go on, and the embarrassment will mount, the damage will mount, and the risks will get greater and greater.
Well, now, Steve, what's your hunch? Will they rise to the occasion or not?
I don't think they have any choice. I think they have to disclose next year. It's the only thing that makes political and let's say political sense and legacy sense. As I've said before, it has to occur right after an election. It can't be, you can't be, I mean, it definitely can't happen just for a presidential election. It'd be still difficult to have it just for a congressional election, or a midterm, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just finished the midterm. I think the ideal time is really the beginning of the second term of a president. The beginning of the first term is not good. I mean, they haven't even settled in. So the beginning of the second term is the ideal time, but and that, I think that might have happened under George Bush Sr., but he didn't get a second term.
Mm-hmm.
And if they think that George Bush is a lock, Jr. is a lock for the second term, they're making a very big mistake. I think that would be extremely risky to predict. These are not times when one makes those kinds of predictions.
Yeah, it's a very volatile time.
And so the unification of government, whether one likes it or not, is actually, I think, quite conducive to the disclosure process moving forward within government itself. There are other issues and so forth that are all highlighted at the Paradigm Clock website under the Time Change Chronicle in the clock section, and you could kind of list all the various things which have gone into factoring the time change and putting it up another 30 seconds, not the least of which is, of course, that the images finally started pouring out of the Mars Global Surveyor, or at least in terms of their being published and posted.
Mm-hmm.
There's now over 110,000. So you can imagine the thousands of images haven't even looked at yet. And they're being reviewed, thanks to the Internet, all over the world. Then the Mars Odyssey, the 2001 Odyssey craft, started generating, as you know, the infrared images under with the THEMA system. And those are producing new evidence. And so the anomalies, artificiality theory, is still quite alive. And I think NASA has also indicated some changes in its approach to the issue, which is very interesting. I see that as pre-positioning on the part of NASA, pre-disclosure.
What about their changes? I mean, can you kind of give me a thumbnail on that? We're about out of time, but I need to...
Probably the most remarkable is that they actually initiated a conference call. The head of Mars, the Mars study group at NASA, a major player, James Garvin, actually initiated a two-hour conference call with Richard Hoagland and Peter Gerst. And in that conference call, offered them opportunity to come and present, to be on panels, to get involved, to be a part of it, and try to account for some of their past failures to get information out in a way that had been requested. Just a complete 180, which was remarkable. It was not that well known. Dick, of course, talked about it on Coast to Coast a number of times and mentioned on his website, but you have to understand the whole history of NASA and Dick Hoagland. For them to do that is absolutely astounding. And so I think that is one of the key things that indicates some kind of a change in NASA, their pre-positioning, because they have a real problem. You see, if the government indicates the presence of extraterrestrials, instantly you know the questions are going to be asked of NASA. And NASA can't suddenly be sitting there going, we've got closets full of anomaly evidence and this and that, and we just meant to tell you. They need to start a ramping process where it looks like they're getting information out into the marketplace or into the intellectual marketplace, and so they're seen at least as best as possible as being part of a disclosure process themselves, as opposed to simply sitting there with the crown jewels for some 40 years. And they don't have a lot of time, and so they've been I think going through that for the last 8 months. It's kind of cosmetic. But for those in the know, but for the general public, I mean, they'll be generous. They'll be going, wow, so you had those photos, and look at that stuff in there, and oh, boy, and there really are extraterrestrials, and there were artificial structures on Mars, and wow. And they're not going to start asking hard questions like, well, what did you know in 68, 78, 81, 85? They're not going to ask those, at least not right away.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another component in moving the clock. The one negative when I adjusted the clock was the Iraq War, and that is simple, that it does create a substantial degree of uncertainty for next year, certainly in the first half of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And if things go badly, now I don't think we're going to go to war, but if things get out of hand, then disclosure could be tabled. And So if the Iraq war ramp up was not underway, we'd be even closer to midnight, probably a minute and 15 seconds away. But that certainly is a negative. So that was factored in. Mm-hmm. So the net result is we're now a minute and a half from midnight, which is still pretty close.
Yeah, it certainly is. Now, Stephen Bassett, I'm going to let you go here in a minute, but one thing I got to ask you is, why do you think Coast to Coast kind of ignored you there at the end? It would appear to me that it would be to their benefit to.
We don't know.
They're
owned by Clear Channel Communications, which is a very conservative company.
That's immediately the first thought I had.
The Mays family is extremely conservative.
I've worked for Clear Channel. We'll never work for them again.
And,
you can't ever say that. Cannot say that because
they're the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible they put the word down. We know that George Bush Sr. is close to the Mays family, who were the two executives in that public company. So they might have put the word down. We don't want that kind of politics on the show. I don't know.
You never really got a good explanation from anybody, huh?
No.
Just they just kind of ignored you.
One show, prior to August weekend, that was it. And I can tell you that the loss of that audience, of being able to really get that audience up to speed and aware and involved, took the pressure off the local media and the local radio and even some of the national talk shows. I did end up getting two Fox Studio 3B stints, but that didn't parlay in anything else.
I saw one of those, and it was a pretty decent interview as far as Shepard Smith was doing, but they showed a lot of strange graphics in the background.
But, you know, the second time around, they took some of that out. Actually, Fox is a friend of this issue, and ultimately it will be seen that way further. It is a friend of the issue. But without that pressure in the media, then it was possible the pollsters to keep me out. And without the media and the pollsters, you can't get in the debates. And without the media, the pollsters, and the debates, you're going to get 1,500 votes. You're not going to be able to get to that threshold where you can force the 5%. So from a political standpoint, from a hardball politics, I have my hats off to the media and to the opponents of disclosure. I mean, they did very well. I mean, they were there. Now, the problem the case faces is there are going to be more candidates like me. I mean, I'm just the beginning, just one. There'll be others.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another factor here. You know how expensive these elections are? You know, there were $22 million spent in just the Georgia governor election.
Oh, it's
20-some million here in our governor election. And in California, probably, you know, national product of several African countries was spent on the elections out there.
Yes, uh-huh.
And guess where all this money goes? It goes to the television network.
Yes, it does.
It goes to the newspapers. They spend millions and millions of dollars. And the independent third-party candidates don't have any money, so we don't give them any money. We don't run expensive ads. And so consequently, it doesn't surprise anybody that the party candidates get massive coverage and the 30-party candidates are treated like poor workers. I mean, they're treated like kooks and fools.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have no money to put in the coffers of the newspapers through ads and so forth. This is an incestuous, destructive, closed-minded, dangerous, anti-democratic process that is going on all across the country. It is a big, big problem.
I've been very concerned about it for some time, and I don't see it getting much better.
It'll get better when the people get mad enough and angry enough to do something about it.
Remember, if you
can't go to the polls to vote at all, at any moment now, some of that 75% that aren't showing up, many of those could turn up tomorrow and shake the tree pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
But if they decide not to, then they will live with the consequences. But don't get me wrong. We sent the message. The first time in history that issue was raised in a congressional election.
What's next for you?
XPAC is getting some material out. Paradigm Research Group is going to try to go out and try to raise some money for XPAC. And the campaign still exists. The campaign fund exists. I will continue to try to raise money for it. The website will remain active and will continue to grow.
Then you may be back in there in 2 years. Huh?
If they don't disclose by June of next year, then we'll start the whole thing up only 8 months sooner with a lot more knowledge and maybe some front money, and we'll call it Disclosure 2005 and do the whole darn thing again. But Steve, I think they're going to disclose next year, to be honest with you.
Steve, we'll be back in touch with you. Thank you very much for taking the time to explain all this to me.
Always a pleasure, Jerry. Been a great supporter of this whole issue, and I know we're all going to be rewarded.